Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Arya Irani, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principles of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here, locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu to find more information. The title of today's forum is A Utah Immigration Conversation. The moderator for today is Marty Carpenter. Marty Carpenter is the Executive Vice President of Communication at the Salt Lake Chamber. Marty Carpenter joined the Salt Lake Chamber as Director of Communication in June 2008. He serves as spokesman and is responsible for the Chamber's public message and media relations. Marty is also the managing editor of the Chamber blog, social media, and website. In 2012, Marty took a brief leave of absence from the Chamber to oversee communications for Governor Gary R. Herbert's successful re-election bid. Marty began his career as a sports broadcaster, making stops at television stations first at KTKA in Topeka, Kansas, and then at KJRH in Tulsa, Oklahoma. During college, he worked as a news editor at KSL-TV and did video replay on local sporting events, including Utah Jazz games. Marty graduated cum laude from Weber State University in 2001. He and his wife, Nicole, have four children. Please welcome me in joining Marty Carpenter, our moderator.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction, and thanks all for being here with us this morning. It's my understanding Starbucks is giving away some kind of free coffee today, so the fact that you're all here instead of there, congratulations and thanks for being with us. That applies also to our esteemed panelists today. We want to welcome them all and thank them for joining us as we have a discussion on one of the most interesting and hot topics going on in our country today. Our panelists, by way of introduction, on the far right there is Jason Mathis, who is the executive director of the Downtown Alliance. He's also an executive vice president at the Salt Lake Chamber. Jason was one of the principal authors of the Utah Compact. In the middle, Senator Luz Robles. She represents Utah's 1st District, and as a member of the Democratic Party, she also is the minority caucus manager. Thanks very much for being with us, Senator Robles. And closest to me here, our former Attorney General, Mark Shurtleff, has joined us, also a big supporter of the Utah Compact and an outspoken proponent of comprehensive immigration reform. We thank you all for being with us today. Well, we had, just before we started, asked everyone to text to the number that you see at the top of the slide there. We'd like you to do that now if you have not. While we're doing that, if you'll look at your phones, if you haven't sent the word immigration via text to 202-888-1400, now's the time. We like using text in this setting because I imagine you all have this skill set down. And we'll be able to text, and we'll get through a few questions. We're using this technology today to get a feel for our audience and to let you weigh in on some of the things we want to talk about during our discussion today. So let's get underway with our first question. We're going to do two of these off the bat, and then after that we'll get into some questions with our panelists. And panelists, if you have your cell phones handy, I think you're more than welcome to weigh in on this. I don't think you'll sway the voting too much.
Welcome to the Utah Immigration Conference. Okay.
What is your level of understanding of the immigration system and the overall efforts for immigration reform? Text the letter of your answer. A for expert, B if you're a professional, C for an amateur, D if you're a rookie, and I hope we don't have any E's, people who can't assess their own understanding of this topic that we don't know. The number again, 202-888-1400, and we'll give you a second to ponder your level of expertise. Text that in, and the results should pop up for us on the screen.
It's like skier, so, you know, beginner, intermediate, that's advanced, right. Expert.
Are you a black diamond?
That's right.
Black diamond,
right.
Black diamond is expert.
Don't worry, we're not going to come back to you and really challenge if you are an expert. Luz already challenged me. She saw I put A, and she's like, you're not an expert.
So we have 38% professionals, 38% amateurs, a few experts, and some rookies. Okay, so we have a pretty good mix and a lot of folks sort of right in the middle. Let's do one more question to get us warmed up here. Do you personally know anyone who is an undocumented immigrant? Do you have a friend, a family member, a neighbor, someone that is an acquaintance of yours that that is an undocumented immigrant? Text the letter of your answer again. You'll see the choices up there. Yes, I am an undocumented immigrant. Yes, I know someone who is undocumented. I know someone who knows someone. No, but I'm sure they exist, or I just don't know. We'll wait for the responses to pop up.
That's actually cool.
You guys should do this in the Senate.
And the survey says?
I don't know where they stand.
No, but I'm sure they exist as the largest amount, 40%, but we do have a couple that we do have some that say they are and some that know someone that is. So that gives us an idea of the audience here in the room. And with that, let's get underway with a few other questions. So to our panelists, I want to start with this. All three of you are supporters, publicly been supporters of the Utah Compact. From what we know so far of the bill that has just been released this week, and it's some 866 pages long, so I presume you've all read it over twice and cross-referenced it and highlighted it. From what you know of it to this point, does the bill line up to the principles espoused by the Utah Compact? And let's start with you, Mr. Attorney General.
Thank you. I do believe it is, because the principles behind the compact were just guiding principles that are fundamental to America for a long time. We kind of lost touch with, I think, when we were looking at state-by-state immigration reform, where there was this huge push a few years back, starting with Arizona 1070, to be punitive, to do this self-deportation and to drive people underground and to be, have this strict punitive response. And Utah, of course, with people right here, sitting up here, and others from the Southern Institute and others, came together and said, look, we have to stop that very harmful economically, harmful from a public safety standpoint, very harmful from a community cohesion and family unity and so forth standpoint. We needed to stop a 1070-type approach. But we had to do something more than just say no, because people here in Utah had been frightened, they'd been misinformed, they wanted something done. And so we felt, let's go back to guiding principles. People here in this state and across the country, frankly, understand that. And with the Utah Compact came this concept that if you're going to go forward with state-by-state reform, it should be done in a common sense, pragmatic, compassionate, yes, a way, and do it in a comprehensive form. And people thought in Utah, red is a red state, no one's ever going to talk about anything like comprehensive reform, and yet our legislators, our brave legislators on both sides of the party, and Senator Robes was a leader on this, did step up and do the right thing. That has spread now across the country. Soon we had compacts in Indiana, now Texas, and other places are regional. But it was always understood that all roads lead to Washington when it comes to immigration reform. And hoping, at one point, almost beyond hope, that something would finally be done by Congress, and now they are. And I'll say it flat out, because I've spoken all over this country at symposium and conferences. They are all from the White House, including the president himself, on down through Congress and other immigration. They all look to Utah and say, wow, you all started something there. And much of what is in this this proposal from the Gang of Eight in the Senate does reflect those principles, I believe.
Senator Robles, do you agree?
Absolutely. I was reading the bill, not last night, but the previous night, and it's 866 pages, you're right. But yeah, it was. I was surprised to see that it's reasonable, it's comprehensive, it's really addressing the issues that are part of the Utah Compact, which is, you know, family as a unity, making sure we're taking care of families, because we are a country that you know, it's about families. That's what America is about. It's also about the economic impact of our nation. So we are addressing labor demands, which is what drives immigration from the get-go, and it's also addressing national security. I mean, border security is critical. I don't think anybody disagrees that we need to take care of our national security. So overall, it was very comprehensive. It's lengthy. You know, there's some pieces there that are obviously through compromises between the two sides of this issue, and there's going to be more to do work with that. But overall, I was very pleased. Like you said, it's the working of many, many years, and you sometimes think there's no light at the end of the tunnel, and now we're seeing light, and it's exciting to be part of that process and witnessing a historical moment in our nation. Yeah.
Jason, the very first principle of the Utah Compact says that it's an issue between the federal government and other countries, not between Utah and other countries. So at the very least, we've gotten that far. Do you agree with your two fellow panelists that, yes, the bill, from what you understand of it, espouses the principles of the Utah Compact?
Yeah, absolutely. As you stated, there are really five principles, and the first one is that, look, this is a federal issue. This is not an issue between our state and Guatemala or Mexico or Canada or China or any other country. This is between our federal government. I think a lot of the frustration in the past has been because the federal government has not acted or not acted appropriately in dealing with immigration questions. And the fact that now they are taking it up, they're aggressively looking at it, they're trying to do it in a balanced way, in a balanced approach. I think there should be broad recognition that the current system we have now does not work. It is the most ineffective, terrible system you could ever have. It doesn't work for immigrants. It doesn't work for people who may be living here without documentation. It certainly doesn't work for employers, whether that's in the high-tech industry or agriculture or hospitality or any of the myriad of industries that have immigrants who work there. And we have to do something. And the compromises, the bill that has come forward, is a rational, reasonable, thoughtful approach that is attempting to finally solve this problem once and for all. And really, this is within our grasp. We can do this. We just need vision, courage, leadership from our congressional leaders, which I think has sometimes been a little bit lacking. But now at last, I think we're finally seeing light at the end of the tunnel, and people are actually starting to move forward and aggressively to solve this problem. And that's something that the business community has been requesting for a long time, along with religious organizations, along with other community leaders, along with people in the immigration community. Finally, everyone's coming together to solve this problem and asking Congress to do their job once and for all and solve this.
Can I just capitalize on what he just said? Coming together, you know, there are the principles, the five principles, but I think even more extraordinary is those behind the principles. The concept was we are going to get, obviously begin with all those who've spent their lives on migrant issues and immigrant issues and minority issues. They've worked on these issues forever. But then to bring in faith-based communities and law enforcement and business, Bibles, badges, and business, to support this. And then, sure. Because the concept obviously behind a compact is bigger than America. We use the word really compact going back to a Mayflower compact, mm-hmm. where before the pilgrims set forth their feet onto U.S., or not U.S., American soil or this new country, they knew they were different. They weren't all the same religion. They were carpenters, they were non-religious people. They said, in order to get along, let's just state a few principles so that we can succeed as a community in this new world. So it's that concept of coming in. Now, wouldn't it be amazing that Congress finally, after all these years of the inability to work together, and that's why we are all disgusted, frankly, with Congress, because they cannot balance a budget, they can't get together on issues that are important to us. It's always so highly politically charged. But to take an issue that is it's about a politically charged that we've ever seen, like immigration reform, where people are on both sides and feel very strongly about this. If they could come together on this bill at this time, they can do anything. And that's the message we want all Americans to send to our members of Congress.
A question I want to follow up with. You guys all mentioned various principles of the Utah Compact. Law enforcement didn't get as much of a push there, and that is one of the guiding principles of the Utah Compact. So let's start with the man who was the highest law enforcement official in the state. From what you've seen of the bill, do you think that it will help law enforcement in their efforts to keep the community safe?
Well, absolutely. Right now, with the broken immigration system we have, the public is not safe in so many ways. You have to have a system that works in order to enhance public safety to reach law enforcement's goals. Now, clearly, we are a rule of law nation. And the very first thing people are going to say is, what don't you understand about the word illegal? I mean, that's the big argument. And that what we do with the 11 million that are here, the oppositions will all say that they, you know, some people suggest that they somehow still need to be rounded up and shipped home, they ought to be punished, imprisoned, whatever. The key here is to understand is that law enforcement is not giving up on the importance of border security, and there is a substantial amount of additional resources being put into that. One thing I want to make very clear at this point, since border security is a law enforcement issue, that is you're going to hear opposition say, in order to defeat this bill, we can't do anything until we secure the borders. That was one of the big arguments last time that killed comprehensive reform under President Bush. You have to understand, and I've already heard it now, our borders still aren't secure. When I first was elected to office in 2000, when some of you were in like grade school, that year, 2000, we had about 8,500 border agents, Border Patrol agents. And we were apprehending about 1.6 million people at that time coming across the border illegally. Fast forward to my last year in office last year, 2012, we have three times the number of Border Patrol agents, up in the 20, 24, 26,000. And this will add another 3,500. We had 365,000 apprehensions last year, which tells you the border is substantially more secure. We're making progress. It's not perfect. But we do need to deal with that, and we are dealing with it in a reasonable fashion, and it ought to be done together. So there's no reason to stop and wait. To dealing with those in our communities now who are undocumented, the vast majority are law-abiding citizens. They're working. They're contributing. Their kids are in our schools. They're participating in Scouts and Junior Jazz. But they have been marginalized. And this punitive approach drives them further underground. They are great resources because they want to work with law enforcement in a cohesive community to protect all of us against those few who are here illegal and are criminals committing other crimes. And so absolutely important to bring these points together to fix the legal immigration system, deal with the problem of those who are here on undocumented status. All that will absolutely enhance public safety in this country.
Senator Robles?
You know, I think it's, when I mention national security, it is that public safety component beyond the border security. I mean, border security is critical, but there's more to that immigration, the lack of a comprehensive immigration reform has not allowed for our local law enforcement agencies to have tools to be more proactive. You talk to law enforcement, and in Utah, they've been wonderful. I mean, we do have this amazing, very proactive law enforcement agencies that what they want is keep communities safe. So safety is critical, and they're not here. And, you know, they're clear. They're like, look, we're not here to enforce immigration, you know, laws. We were, if that was the case, I would be working for Immigration Customs Enforcement. I'm here to make sure that people feel safe, that I can get information when needed to catch the criminals that are causing problems in our communities. And in our case, we have the driving privilege card, for example, for undocumented immigrants, which is a national model on how to make sure communities are cohesive when it comes to information. So yes, I believe the new bill, and the parts that I was reading, and it was long, will allow to have law enforcement access to information. What we want to know is who's here, where do they live, their names, who these individuals are, and most of them, as explained before, are otherwise law-abiding citizens. I mean, they're just your regular mom and dad working, providing for their families, and at one point, they either overstayed a visa or they were not able to reunite with their families and they had to cross the country legally. So all of those issues, aside from those issues, they're here. They're just working and providing for their families, and we do need components of public safety. I mean, that is important. I think for most Americans, they want to know that they're safe, that law enforcement know who these people are, everybody in this country, and make sure we're safe. And in our case, in Utah, with our driving privilege card, has been a great example. We're able to now look around and say, oh, we know who this individual is. I have a driver's license, a driving privilege card in place. We know that they've been taking classes, that they paid for a test, that they know how to drive in our state. And that has provided a safer state of Utah, I believe. And it will be the same when it comes to this immigration law. Mm-hmm.
Jason, do you have anything to add?
Well, I would just say it really comes down to a question of prioritization and resources, that no matter how much money we give law enforcement, they're not going to be able to do everything that anyone could ever conceive that they might possibly do. And so really what it comes down to is saying, how can they prioritize? How can they focus on the aspects of their job that are really the most important in terms of keeping us safe? How can they make sure that they have the resources to go after people who are doing crimes that are actually hurting Utahns immediately? And so I think that was one of the big questions. When the compact was developed, there were a lot of questions about what's the appropriate role
for local law enforcement. And that really, I think, helped to prompt the conversation. It was really in a response in a lot of ways to what was happening in Arizona, where the police were being encouraged to ask anyone at any time to prove that they were in the country legally. And I think there was a sense that that wasn't, not only was that not a compassionate or thoughtful or maybe the most moral thing to do of what we want our police force to do, it's also a question of resources, and that these people don't have the resources. Our police department don't have the resources to act in this way. We want them to focus on actually fighting crime, not worrying about civil violations of federal code. And so I think that this bill does address that. I mean, I think it's been very thoughtful, and there's an argument out there sometimes that we need a lot more discussion and debate on this, and certainly we need it to go through the appropriate channels in Washington, D.C. We don't need to rush it. But we've been talking about this for years. There's no question that the issues are well documented, well understood, that people have had ample opportunities to weigh in on these things for many, many years. And I think the bill reflects that. It really reflects a very sophisticated understanding of these issues because it's been developed for so long, over so much time. Now, the real question is, do we have the political courage to move forward and execute the will of Utahns and the political and the rest of the country in enacting this?
And, you know, and I'm sorry to interrupt because I do have to say an opportunity to call on my U.S. senators that if they cannot review a bill within a reasonable period of time, I'm concerned about an issue that's been discussed for so long. So this idea that, oh, there's not enough time. And I'm thinking, are you serious? Like, there's not enough time for what? To take action on something that we've been discussing for at least a decade or more. And I just find that was very disappointing. And I really do call on our U.S. Senator, especially Senator Lee, to really just, you know, do his job. I mean, I'm excited to see him do a review of the bill. He has staff, and if he needs help, there's a lot of us that are willing to put a call on him and have a discussion with him about the importance of comprehensive immigration reform. And I just want to make sure that our congressional representatives are out there doing their job. I mean, we all do our works, and they get paid and they get elected by people, and I'm expecting them to take action. I mean, whatever that looks like. I may disagree with them, but take action and don't give me the excuse that there's not enough time to review a bill, because that's unacceptable.
It may not be as much of a page turner, but at 866 pages, yeah, it's essentially a Harry Potter book, and people can read those in less than a week. Right?
And they have staff, and so I will be sitting before Senator Hatch and Senator Lee on Monday. I'm testifying before the Judiciary Committee on law enforcement. I'm sure issues of amnesty will come up, and we'll probably get to talk about that allegation here sometime today. But some of these questions you might answer today, I might be able to share with our senators. That's going to be a very interesting session. Now, it may be pushed to Tuesday because Janet Napolitano, the Secretary of Homeland Security, was supposed to be testifying today, but may be in Boston. It may be pushed back a day. But I will, either Monday or Tuesday, be there in Judiciary, and I'm sure they will be there. Senator Sessions, I'm a little concerned about. He's from Alabama. He complained that these hearings are being held on Friday and Monday when the Senate usually isn't there. And my response to him... is, with all due respect, Senator, be there. What could be more important than right now on the Judiciary Committee in starting this process?
Can I just make a point? Because this wasn't the question you asked, but we sort of talked a little bit about it. Your boss and mine, Lane Beatty, had a little bit of some harsh words for Utah senators recently. And I think it wasn't so much animosity as it was a sense of frustration. We really think highly of Utah senators. We think that they are capable and competent, and sometimes you're the most harsh to the people that you love the most. And so I think that it's definitely doable, it's definitely actionable, and I think it's okay to hold political leaders accountable and to say we'd like you to move forward. I know we have some representatives from the senators here with us today, and I'm sure they'll take this message back. But it's really because we think highly of you, we think that you're capable of doing this, and we trust you to do the right thing and to make the right decision. And as your constituents, part of our responsibility as citizens and as constituents is holding our political leaders accountable and responsible and encouraging them to move forward in a way that is expeditious but also appropriate on these bills that have been talked about for so many years.
I want to talk about the timing of this issue. You know, these things politically sort of come in big waves, and sometimes those waves have to start from a great distance out and be generated so they have the right power at the right moment. 1986, immigration reform passed. It's really our last significant change to our immigration system back under President Reagan. We had a run at this under President George W. Bush. This is the first run at it under President Obama. In that mix, we've talked about the Utah Compact and a number of other things that had to go on. We've obviously just recently finished a presidential election where immigration came up as an issue and sort of gained some momentum out of that. So I guess the question I want to ask to each of you is, why is this time different? Why is it different than the last time we failed to get this done and the time before? Why is this time different? And let's start with Senator Robles.
That's a tough question. You know, well, of course, with President Bush, I think we had the September 11 attacks, and we cannot disregard the fact that that really did change America in many, many ways, not only on immigration. So I think that was a very unfortunate scenario that really just people had to rethink the way they were addressing issues and the way we were looking into, again, our national security. So I think that was really one of the biggest unfortunate scenarios and really just changed how we discuss immigration. Now, yes, I mean, let's be realistic. This last election cycle was an eye-opening experience for both political parties, not only, the Republican Party that lost the presidential bid, but also, I think, for the Democrats as well. So they obviously now understand the impact of a big segment of our population, which is a Latino vote. And for the Hispanic Latino community, it's not the most important issue. But it is in the top three, and they feel it is, in a way, a personal attack, even if the reality is the vast majority of them are U.S. citizens and legal in this country. It still sometimes has been, unfortunately, they've been using immigration as a way of attacking communities of color, in this case, the Latino community, which is the fastest-growing community in the state and in the nation. So I think both parties have learned their lesson, and they're saying, look, I mean, we really want this segment of the population. We want them to understand that we care for them, and this is a critical issue for them. Let's go and take action. I work in the private sector. I work for a financial institution, and when you're marketing, it's like anything else. That's your market. You target the market, and what are their needs? And guess what? For the Latino community, their needs is comprehensive immigration reform to fix this issue, and now both parties seem to be getting the message, and they're going to act upon it.
Yeah. Mr. Attorney General, how did recent events lead us to where we are today?
Well, certainly, as Senator Robles pointed out, what a difference an election will make, a national election, where clearly Republican Party has lost substantially in its ability to make an impact nationally. Because of the vote, not just the Latino vote, the Asian vote, even in greater numbers. I think 70% of the Asian vote went to President Obama. Much, again, because of the sentiment, they felt like the Republican Party wasn't a party concerned with minority issues and so forth. So the party now gets that, the Republican Party nationally. Many leaders do. People say, well, is that the right motive to do this? You know, at this point, I don't care what the motive is.
Just do it.
It needs to get done. Yeah. There are, you know, just speaking just of the dreamers, just those million kids out there plus who are Americans for all intents and purposes, who love this country, who've grown up here, who want to use their educations and get jobs and give back and contribute to our society. We need to get it done. And so there's been this inability in the last several years now in Congress that you cannot give the other party a win. If a president proposes something, yeah. No matter what we do, even if it's your nominees to every little minor thing, we're going to fight it. And I think Americans are getting disgusted with that. And here's a chance now where the timing is right. We're way out from another presidential election. We're still, you know, a year away from the next congressional, year and a half of congressional elections. Republicans stepping up jointly. Marco Rubio, for example, on no less than 7 national radio talk TV programs on Sunday, saying this is a joint. This isn't a win for anybody. It's a win for everybody. It's the timing is really, really critical now, early. And I think that's why there's going to be this push to try and get as much done prior to Memorial Day, to move this thing along, and surely to have all the debates we need. And House has got a gang of 8 themselves that I've met with many of them, and there'll be a conference committee, and I think people will come together. Now is the time, and it's going to be a great demonstration, I think, of finally some ability to get something done. But there will be huge opposition. The anti-immigration, the nativists, the FAIRs, and the Numbers USA, and these folks who really do misrepresent majority of Americans and majority of members of my party are going to be calling phone trees and using the internet and email, and everybody else needs to use those as well. Mainstream Americans, like mainstreamed Utahns who got behind Utah Compact need to let your senators and congressmen know that you want this done.
Jason, I've heard you speak before about the bell curve and that there are the minority extremes on each side of this issue. And it seems with the Gang of Eight being a bipartisan group, certainly Senator Rubio trying to take the Republicans into that productive middle portion of the bell curve. There are Democrats doing the same, coming into the middle. Mm-hmm. So is that the biggest difference here, or why is this time different?
Well, I wouldn't underestimate the election. I wouldn't underestimate demographic shifts in our community. I think anybody can see that our country is changing in ways that I think, frankly, are positive. You know, I was looking at this, and I think about myself. So I'm not an immigrant. I grew up about four blocks from here. So I was born at LDS Hospital, lived here my whole life. I don't know a lot of immigrants. In fact, I don't know anyone illegally. So I would be in this "no, but I'm sure they exist" component. But I am really passionate about this issue, and it doesn't have anything to do with being Latino or Asian. It doesn't have anything to do with any sort of racial component that I have or even what I might perceive in others. I care about it because I'm an American and because I think the time is finally right to do something on this issue. And I care about my country. I care about my community. I care that we act in ways that are appropriate, that are progressive in the sense, not liberal or conservative, but in the sense of actually making progress, of being constructive, of finding solutions. And I think that the reason the time is right now is because everybody is moving in that same direction. As Marty said, I like bell curves a lot because I think they're really an interesting way of thinking about demography and populations and decisions that people make. And really, the curve is shifting, and people are starting to think about this and want to contribute to find solutions. And I think that's the reason that this is different now than it was. And I will say, I will give President Bush great credit for trying to do this under his administration. I wish it had happened then. It would have saved people a lot of heartache. It would have saved families a lot of heartache. And it would have created a much stronger economy. But there's no time like the present. We got to do it now because we can't wait another 10 or 15 or 20 years to tackle this project.
Let's talk a little bit specifically about the bill, some of the numbers that are in it. I don't know that we want to necessarily pick apart each little item in it because that will be the job of the Congress to do that, and ultimately there will be plenty of pundits that weigh in. But I do want to just lay out some of the specifics to the bill, some of the elements, and see if you think that has us heading in the right direction or if you see a red flag there that this is something that may ultimately be a sticky point, a hurdle that is really difficult to get over. So let's look at some of the things in the bill, known as the Border Security, Economic Opportunity, and Immigration Modernization Act. No real good acronym there, so we're just going to have to come up with a name. We'll just call it the Immigration Bill. Border security is a topic we've hit on already today. There are some $3 billion appropriated to increase border security, including $1.5 billion to increase some type of fencing along the Mexican-American border and increasing the number of agents. We've talked about this a little bit today. We've talked about this being a hurdle where people say, well, first we need to secure the border. Do we have a metric for that? Is it dollars spent? Is it net immigration from Mexico and South American or Central American countries? Is it boots on the ground? What's the metric? Do we have to agree on that? And does border security have to be an important element of this? Let's start with all six of those questions going to Jason.
In order.
I remember what those questions were.
Number one.
You're not going to answer my question anyway. You're going to say what you want, so just do that.
You know me really well. The thing about border security is you'll never get agreement. There are some people who think it should just be an open border and people should be able to cross back and forth freely. And if you're really a real libertarian, you probably agree with that statement. There are people who would like to see the Great Wall of China built along the border through the Rio Grande, and that's probably not the best use of our resources either. So I think, you know, trying to come up with a balance, trying to come up with a compromise, do we have an obligation to try to protect our border and keep it safe? Yes. Should we devote 5%, 10%, 20%, 50% of our budget to something like that? Probably not. That's probably a really dumb idea to devote that much. So I think it's really this question of balance about how many resources do we have? Where else could we invest them? Could we put those same resources into education? Could we put those into research and development to help grow American companies? Could we put those same resources into oil exploration or national parks or any number of things? There's no limit to the potential number of things that we could invest in.
White House tours, maybe.
White House tours. Would you trade border security for White House tours? So anyway, there's a limit to what we can do and what we should do as a country. And I think that this bill tries to appropriate that. I think, as in the other aspects of the bill, it tries to find a correct balance. I believe in limited government. I think that there are things the government can do and should do, and there are things the government shouldn't do. I don't want to see a giant investment in this, because I think there are other ways that the government should be investing that will get a much bigger return for the people of America. And so, you know, it's probably a good balance. I'm not a security expert. I haven't read much of the bill, maybe a few pages of it, so I don't know a ton about it. But what the numbers that you're talking about seem reasonable to me. But, you know, again, it's a balance, and it's really a question of where do we want to put our resources as a country.
Politically speaking, Senator Robles, do you think that that's going to be enough to mollify those who start with border security first?
You know, I think it's a great start. And by the way, a group of 10 legislators and the lieutenant governor, we actually had a chance to visit Arizona in 2010, the end of 2010. And we, in a rare setting, we actually were allowed to visit and discuss issues with Border Patrol. Eye-opening, by the way. I mean, I think our definition of border security may not be the real, I mean, what is really happening. What I took for me personally out of that and the learning experience of that is that right now our biggest issue is drug trafficking, human trafficking, and gun trafficking. I mean, the arms, right? So it's interesting because people think of billions of people crossing the border. And by the way, I grew up in a border town, San Diego and Tijuana. So it's a little bit of a different setting, and there's so much money happening. You know, there's so much trade and so much economic movement that these, you know, I sometimes wonder if people even know what they're talking about when they throw this, like, oh, let's build this huge wall. And I'm like, huh, try to tell that to the business owners in San Diego that depend on the people from Tijuana shopping every weekend there. I mean, there's just so much money involved and so much economic movement. But what was interesting is learning that most of the resources is now going to intelligence to stop the drug trafficking, human trafficking, and the armed situation. We need to invest on making sure our neighbor countries are also in the same page when it comes to that type of criminal activity. And obviously, you know, Mexico is dealing with some awful situations with their cartels and everything else, but there's a lot of consumption of drugs in the United States that we still need to address as a nation, I think. And so all of that will tie in, but I think the resources are reasonable. I think we all want to feel safe in our nation and in our country, and it's a great start. So I think it's a good place to start. It's not, you know, anything like odd. I think we need to secure our borders, but it's not this idea anymore about people just crossing and running, because it's not even reasonable anymore. People are hardly ever doing that anymore. But you're seeing more of the drug trafficking and human trafficking, which, by the way, you know, the Attorney General here, we are a corridor because of I-80 and I-15. So we tend to be in a place where we see a lot of that situation in a very odd place because it's Utah. But we see it all, and I know the Attorney General has more information on that. But I think it's a good start from what I was reading on that portion.
To get this done, border security is going to have to be an element of the bill. That's sort of what I'm driving toward. Do you think it's enough? Are we headed in the right direction?
Well, you have to remember this. You know, people always had the saying, the best offensive is a good defense. I was an offensive lineman, so I believe the opposite was true. The best best defense is a good offense. And that's true in this case. You have to understand, it's not just solve the problem and build the Great Wall of China and put billions, because still half the people are here because they overstayed visas. They never crossed a border illegally. But more importantly, people understand that it is the best way to stop illegal crossings is to fix our system now. It's to fix legal immigration, to streamline that, to make it happen right, and then provide an ability of those who are here working to go back home when they want to, and then come back here and work, and go back and be able to go back and forth with these new biometric work authorization cards, which sounds an awful lot like a guest worker permit to me. I don't know if they came up with that concept based on what Utah did here. But that's the key. I mean, again, it was like the concept behind our guest worker program. People were upset. Why aren't you first going after law enforcement, using all your resources to go after those who are working here with a stolen Social Security number? The kind of money in the end that would have to be put into that, I told the legislature one time when I was asked that by one of the House members in our Appropriations Committee, why aren't you getting those who are using our kids' stolen IDs? I said, you want to appropriate me another $1 or $2 million, we'll go after those guys. Well, they didn't have the resources. But with guest worker, where you allow them to work guess what?
They don't need
them. Just like that, you stop the illegal conduct. So the rest of this bill, if it goes forward and in a comprehensive nature, really does as much or more about stopping illegal border crossings than fencing and surveillance and boots on the ground.
Another big issue, maybe on the opposite end of that bell curve, is going to be the pathway to citizenship. You know, the right seems to want the border security, and the left needs to have the pathway to citizenship. So can they meet in the middle? Some interesting components to this when you get into that issue. If the bill passes in its current form without any significant changes, after 10 years, folks could get a green card, those who are here, and add an additional 3 years onto that. They could have a process where they apply for citizenship. There are other elements in there. They have to pay a $1,000 fine, pay back taxes. They have to learn English. They have to be employed. They have to have a clean criminal record. Does that cover that? Does that take care of what we need to do as far as a pathway to citizenship? And by that, I'm asking, is it difficult enough for the right, and is it easy enough for the left to meet in the middle? Jason, Senator Robles is chomping at the bit.
This is really exciting because it actually is part of what we drafted on the original SB 60, and I know Stan from the Sutherland Institute is here. He was just key in drafting that part, and it's the idea, which for Utah resonates well, of accountability. And most individuals, I've never met an undocumented immigrant that said, oh, I want to be a citizen tomorrow. Where do I? They've been waiting for so long for an opportunity to be here in a legal way. And this idea that, you know, that they will be able to have a work permit or whatever, you know, the card, that biometric card, that will allow them to work and be here waiting for 10 years, paying taxes, to have that history in place, that record, and then go and apply for their legal permanent residency card, which used to call them green cards. They're not even green anymore. They're pink. But, you know, there were the infamous green
cards.
Nobody
wants a pink card.
Yeah. No, right? I want a pink card. They're pretty.
all of our immigration is women all of a sudden.
Yeah. And then having this chance of then going for a citizenship, you know, I think is a great compromise. I mean, it's 13 years. It's a good time for, you know, for some people that may question integration components. They're going to be able to integrate. They're going to be able to take classes, but they're going to be safe. So there's, you know, people forget that these are human beings that for so long have been living in fear. I don't think we can comprehend the fear factor unless you've been there. And I, from meeting people that are in those situations, they literally live in fear to go to the store to pick up their kids from school. And people's like, what do you mean? I mean, how fearful can that be? Well, it's fearful enough for you to get into a car crash and being scared from the police because now you don't have a way to, you know, prove who you are and everything else. So now they're going to have this chance. I'm hearing from that community, that immigrant community, they're excited for that opportunity. That opportunity to work 13 years to get to the citizenship component. I mean, for some people it's like, wow, 13 years. I mean, and don't take me wrong. Right now it takes about 7 to 8 years if you come here legally to get to that citizenship. I mean, so, you know, from a working permit, green card, and then citizenship. So I think it's reasonable. I think it shows compromise. And, you know, I may sound too moderate from some members of the left and too liberal from the right, but at the end of the day, I can guarantee you that most Americans are in that place where it's like, okay, there has to be a process, accountability, self-responsibility, a fine, because, you know, there was a violation at one point of law, and pay your fee and pay your fine, and it's reasonable. So I was very surprised even on the amount of money for the fines.
Yeah. Jason.
I think this speaks to why comprehensive reform is so essential. One of the arguments against a pathway to citizenship has been, well, it's not fair to all these other people who are waiting in these other countries who would like to come here. Well, that's not that they're not coming here. The reason they're not coming here doesn't have to do with people who are living here currently without documentation. The reason they're not coming here is because we have a screwed up visa system that doesn't allow them to come here.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind sometimes how people make these arguments.
There's no correlation.
Yeah, it's not like we're an elevator with a certain number of people who can fit inside the elevator and there's all these people waiting to get in. It doesn't correlate at all. So the idea of comprehensive reform is you fix everything at once. You get a visa system that works. You get a visa system that allows people who have come here to get master's degrees or doctorates who are doing research to stay here. You get a visa system that allows for a guest worker program. You get a system that doesn't put people at the front of the line, but that actually fixes the line so that everyone who our country can accept can come here and work. And you do it in an orderly, systematic way. But the idea that somehow people who are living here currently are causing the problem of our messed up visa reform system is irrational. It doesn't make any sense at all. So that's one of the major reasons we need comprehensive reform. We need to fix all of these things at the same time.
Mr. Attorney General?
Well, I'm kind of surprised, frankly, that the Gang of Eight came out with flat out, they said, pathway to citizenship, because the debate was Republicans were going to stay a pathway to some kind of legalization, legal status, but not citizenship. And I was quite pleased that that the Republican members of this group decided that there could be and should be included in here a pathway to citizenship for those who want it, as long as that there are the penalties in place so that it doesn't become an amnesty, because it's not an amnesty when there are all these penalties and provisions in place. It'll be interesting. There'll be a big fight over this one, particularly with the House, and whether they go all the way to allow citizenship. I hope in one area they can agree. Everybody can agree. I mean, for crying out loud, even Sean Hannity has agreed with this. He said he's evolved and that there ought to be a pathway to
citizenship. A day after the election, he evolved.
Can we evolve this evolution?
You should love the evolution. But to talk about the dreamers, the young people who clearly should have this pathway to citizenship, and I'm glad that it's much quicker in the bill.
It's expedited for them. It's faster for them.
It's 5 years, and then five it can years. Be a turnaround almost instantaneously, which is great. And I think it's wonderful, because we mentioned Senator Hatch before, and Senator Hatch, oh my goodness, what a champion out there, forefront on the DREAM Act as a sponsor. Karen Crompton with Utah Children was saying that the young lady who was kind of really inspiration, is she here today? I don't know if she wants to identify herself, but I will just say thank you, and that's why I would love to see. That's why I would love to see Senator Hatch, and I think he will. He's always been known through his entire career as a man who will work across political lines to for good things. And he's proposed a couple of very important bills himself that we pulled into this thing. And so we're just calling him back. His words when he introduced the DREAM Act on the Senate floor, being inspired by someone here in this room is great. So all your voices are very important.
There's one more point I want to hit before we get into just sort of a final statement from all of you, as our time is a little bit short. And Jason, I want to come to you as the business representative on our panel today. We've talked a lot about the types of visas that we need for people who want to come in here and work. H-1B visas for higher skilled workers, the bill calling for an increase from $65,000 a year to $100,000 and ultimately going up higher than that. There are some new visas created, W visas, that are going to be around 20,000 of those introduced for low-skill workers that will increase to around 75,000 by 2019. And then there are changes to the family visas, but specifically with the visas for workers. Why is this so important to the business community that we have a system that is able to adapt to market forces to meet the demand that we have?
Well, I'm a free market guy, and I like the free market. And I think sometimes when government makes arbitrary rules about what the market needs, it causes problems. And so the adaptability is really crucial, because we don't know what the economy is going to be like in 3 years or 5 years or 10 years. We don't know what our high-tech businesses will need. We don't know what our agricultural industries will need. And so rather than focusing on a specific number right now that the bill may foresee, what is important about it is that adaptability, that ability to change over time, to adapt to what our economy needs and what the market needs for people coming. And I should point out that these people who are coming here under these visas are coming here because they want to contribute. They want to be part of our communities. They want to be part of our society, part of our country. Whether they're citizens or not, they're coming here because they care about their families. And that's hard for me to criticize somebody who's coming here because they want to provide a better life for their children.
I picked up on a general tone of optimism from all three of our panelists that something is going to get done. So let's not end with that question. But since we are at the Hinckley Institute of Politics, let's put a little political spin on it. As we go from today until the point when hopefully the president is signing this bill into law or some close form thereof, what is the one thing you're keeping your eye on as a potential hurdle or something you think everyone should be watching as a key component of this going forward? And let's start again with Jason, even though you just went, and we'll work our way back down to the Attorney General and conclude there.
As a Utahn, we're kind of a small state, really. I mean, we have four representatives, two senators, but that shouldn't deter us from being assertive and aggressive in asking our representatives to represent us, So what I'm going to be watching is not necessarily what anybody else does. What I'm going to be watching is what do my representatives, what does my congressman and my two senators, what are they doing to be part of the solution, to provide answers, and to, and this bill may change a little bit. I get that. I understand that. But I want constructive dialogue. I want progress, and I want to see people working together to try to find answers. And the bickering and the hedging and this and the slowing down is not acceptable to me as a voter and as a Utah and as an American. So that's what I'm going to be watching is, you know, what role does Utah have to play? What role do our senators have to play and our representatives? And that's really all we can do because those are the people we've elected and sent back there. But they should be leaders, and they can be leaders. They have the capability to lead on this issue. They've got the support of the business community, of religious communities. They've got the support of the vast majority of Utahns. They need to move forward, and I have an expectation as a Utahn and as a voter that they will do that.
Yeah, Senator Robles.
You know, I think it's the fact that we need to take action. I would have never said that I would put money in Vegas on immigration reform. I will do it now. Not that I do that. Please don't come up with that.
But it's okay if you go to Vegas.
It's like, Vegas, it's legal.
It's legal now, right? Well, and so it's the idea that we are going to have something in place. I'll say I'm really looking forward to our elected officials of Utah taking an approach where it's reasonable, which really reflects Utah and who we are as a state, which brings accountability, self-responsibility, and compassionate approach to this issue. And I think the pathway to citizenship, which I know was very controversial and will be probably one of the biggest hurdles for some of the conservative groups in D.C., just keep an eye on that. I think it's reasonable to treat everyone with respect as human beings as we move forward in this process.
Mr. Attorney General.
That's the purpose behind the compact, going back to where we started. It's principles behind legislation that are really critical, and the truth. I've said this for many years, that over all these years of debate on immigration reform, the biggest casualty has been the truth. Much of what has been passed is based on organized campaigns of misinformation about the population and who they are and the impact on our economy and impact on law enforcement and public safety. The truth has to be told. That's what's going to happen now. The truth must be. So forums like this, people talking, getting the truth out, having people come and testify from business communities, from law enforcement, from migrant communities, from all these different areas, and telling the truth, and not just listening to the same rhetoric and the shrill things that we've heard from groups, and I'll call them out, FAIR and Numbers USA held a big thing in Washington, D.C. like yesterday, saying hold their feet to the fire, and telling lies, frankly, about who the folks are who are in our communities here and what is being proposed. So debate, openness, what America is great, and remember, we are an immigrant nation, and we are a nation that recognizes people, no matter where you are or where you're from, who you are. Coming together in this country, you have an opportunity to succeed, and this is a great opportunity to prove that. So get involved. Stay involved. Thanks for being here.
And with that, we will conclude. We want to thank our panelists, Jason Mathis, the Executive Vice President of the Salt Lake Chamber, Senator Luz Robles, and our former Attorney General Mark Shurtleff. Thank you all very much for your comments. How about a round of applause for all the panelists? And on behalf of all of our panelists, we want to thank the Hinckley Institute of Politics for hosting us today and having giving us this opportunity to speak about this important issue. And we hope that everyone will stay involved as the process moves forward. Thank you very much.